Welcome back to another episode of 15 Minutes with Mark Wade.
Hi, I'm Mark Wade, editor-in-chief of Boom Studios, and I'm here with...
Daphna, who cannot spell.
Yes, but... Oh, no.
No words.
No words. Everything is going well here at Boom Studios. I am gearing up for a two-week sojourn in Singapore, of all places.
Did you write it on your hand?
No,
you
no, no.
You look down
I
like you're like, where am I going to this week?
No, this is a blood blister from my having to put together a spinner rack this morning. I found another spinner rack on eBay.
Because that sounds like a great way to start your morning.
Oddly enough, they don't make spinner racks anymore. I wonder why. I used to lament
because
that, you know.
Too many people are self-injuring themselves
trying to put them together. Because they don't, where are you going to put them? Where, they're spinner racks. They're going to, they're...
Everyone's wanted one in the room. Everyone wants one, but you can never find them.
Well, it's because, again, it's like trying to find a manual typewriter. It's not like it's a growth industry. So really, we're going to do some Q&A from email. But before we start, I just want to talk about the fact that we now have an office mascot.
Can you call it that?
I guess.
It's adorable, but I don't know if it's alive.
It's a mask. It's Miss Pixel is her name, right?
Yes,
that's the, okay.
Yes.
So Kate, who is Ross Ritchie's assistant. She has a
really adorable Chihuahua, which it's a sign that you've been in LA too long when you think Chihuahuas are okay.
I know.
I mean, there's a part of you that's saying, I find a Chihuahua cute. I find something that is inbred.
Yeah.
And technically has genetic disease.
Oh, yeah.
Adorable.
It's the thing about, and I'm going to get a lot of hate mail for this, but what's new? But Chihuahuas are, as I've said, they are rats with good PR is what they are. They're very nervous little animals.
And this one's such a nervous, she just shivers. It makes me feel like God, I have to say. I can strike fear into another being, what's wrong with my life?
Inanimate object can strike fear into the Chihuahua, but why does she shiver? She's always in clothes.
Explain the pet haberdashery to me. You've been in LA for too long,
yeah.
Where you don't blink twice when there's a dog in a dress.
I know.
Walking around like she chose the dress herself and actually had a say in what she's wearing.
Oh, God.
It's just...
She takes a pride in this.
She does. I'm going to repeat the story because it's precious. But she has this little dress, and I'll put a picture on the blog because now I have an iPhone and I can do that sort of thing. And it's got a little ruffle on the butt because dogs are allowed to do that now.
Yeah.
And she has a blanket because she shivers at inanimate objects.
Yes.
And it sometimes gets stuck on her butt. And then she walks around with this bustle on her butt, long trailing wedding tail, and she is just the proudest little...
A little bridal train. Which would not be inappropriate because, as I understand, the weekend that we were away for Baltimore...
Oh, yes. They had their honeymoon.
Yes, that Ross's little pet rat...
And if you've ever met Ross, the image of Ross having a pet chihuahua should, just make you smile for the rest of the decade.
Yeah. But the little wiener dog. So we, Chihuahua. So apparently, Kate took the Ross's dog Spoon in for the weekend, and the two
while he was at Baltimore.
Yeah, while we were by, and then so apparently the two dogs were cohabitating for a while, and
they shared clothes.
I know they shared clothes. That's what I'm leading up to. Is that for you don't understand? I've known this Spoon dog for 10 years, 8 years, whatever, and this little tiny scared little dog, and now it has clothes on it, which I've never had clothes on it before. And the dog, there's this picture of Spoon with Miss Pixel, and Spoon always looks like, even without clothes, Spoon looks like, please kill me, please put me out of my misery. Spoon's eyes are always a plaintive cry for euthanasia, but in this specific instance, when he's wearing clothes, it's just sadder because I swear to God, the only thing that has kept that dog alive at this point is that it doesn't have opposable thumbs to pull a trigger with. That's it. Please give me opposable thumbs so I can take my own life. There will be pictures up on the blog.
We're gonna be that sort of blog.
Yeah,
pictures of pets. You know what? It's worth it.
That's right. Oh, like it's a keyboard spoon. I'm glad we have an office mascot. Does it make everybody happy?
Makes me happy.
Really, isn't that the most important
part? It makes me happy to see Ross talk to the bullpen with this tiny little dog that knows who's boss, and that's her. And she'll, like, Ross is telling us about Baltimore Comic Con and all the awesome things that happen at the retailer summit. And then there's Miss Pixel doing her circle on Ross's lap, like she owns the place.
Wait, so he has these big meetings with the dog in his lap?
Oh, the dog comes. He doesn't bring it. It's just the dog comes, settles down, like, you know, like the Pride Rock and Lion King?
Yeah.
Where they sit on the, overlooking their lands. She does that to Ross's knee. Which overlooks the bullpen of Ross's knee. I've got a picture.
How does that not make Ross look like a Bond villain?
Oh, it's great. It totally does. No hair and tiny little hairless
stroking,
pet.
Stroking his little hairless pet.
Yeah.
Oh, my. So. Oh, the things I miss by being in Baltimore. So other than that, by the way, Baltimore was a hit. There was the convention was big. The convention was huge. Mark Nathan runs that show every year, and he does a great job. The 2 days afterward were our first experience with the retailer seminar, which was a much condensed version of the Baltimore show, by which you set up, publishers set up smaller booths, sort of just to not sell things, but to sort of exhibit what they're doing for the next year. And the retailers who stayed on for this thing, like 600 retailers from all over the United States, come and they listen to us talk, and we give presentations about what we got coming up, and we eat rubber chicken, and we, you know, and we... It's, you know, we haze people and stuff. It's good. Actually, it was good, and the people love Boom. People love our kids' comics in particular. Where the retailers are very happy with the fact that we are putting out kids' comics. So that was overall a good experience.
Wow. So you had two cons in a row, and you came out alive and fairly well adjusted.
Reasonably well adjusted. So
other than now, you have an affection for little tiny dogs in coats.
Who doesn't?
They're really adorable.
All right. So speaking of why other people hate us. Let's read from this poll from the email bag and see what sort of Q&A we can have going here.
We're
going
to go actually talk about comics now.
Okay.
So the first one we've got is from Scott Morse.
Okay.
From the forums.
Yes.
And actually, he emailed us, but he's also on the forums. He's pretty cool. Who or what concept is the least favorite thing you have created for either DC or Marvel? And, of course, why?
Wow, that's a good one. There are... I'm not good at creating villains, and I'll be not good at creating supervillains. I'll be the first to admit this. I'm, you know, I can get into the head of one if it exists. I can do a pretty good Doctor Doom, or I can do a pretty good, you know, we did
Plutonian,
Plutonian Empire stuff. You know, if I really, but in terms of creating guys who are just there to be punching bags, I suck at this. So one of the nadirs of my Flash career was creating a razor bladed villain for Flash named Razor. R-A-Z-E-R. See what I did there? R-A-Z-E-R. See, because he destroyed
like the
things.
Cell phone.
Like he raised. No, like he destroys things. And so, and that was not one of my more inspired moments. Because it's, I mean, on the face of it, it's kind of cool to give Flash an opponent that he can't even touch without cutting himself. But that will last for about 3 pages. There's really nothing there. It's hard to come up with Flash villains in particular because you've got to come up with guys that Flash can't just hit at the speed of light and they're done. And, you know, that's okay. I mean, that's part of the challenge of writing a character with super speed or that can fly or something. You've got to always take into account why these villains would be an actual threat to them. I am not as good about that. I just enjoy writing superheroes. I don't enjoy writing supervillains, Plutonian aside.
I know. Like every time, like, Plutonian.
Except Plutonian. But I really don't. I mean, and actually, frankly, if Plutonian were a more of a standard vanilla supervillain, I wouldn't enjoy writing him either. What makes the only reason I'm interested in writing him is because he used to be a superhero. I don't know what that is. I mean, I know that the acting, you know, trope, the acting thing you hear all the time is it's much more fun to play villains than it is to play heroes. And, you know, people enjoy playing City of Villains more than they enjoy playing City of Heroes and villains. But it's just, it's a personal thing. I don't know. I dig the superheroes and I don't know. Maybe I'm just too much of a good boy. I don't know.
As you wear the Plutonian hat.
As I wear the Plutonian hat.
Is there, outside of the Plutonian, because we know how you feel about him.
Yes.
Is there a villain you're proud of?
That's a good question, actually.
And this might lead us into the next question.
That's true. Well, I created Savitar for him, who was like the guy who was supposed to have gotten the Flash powers and didn't. And I think that actually worked out well. But, it's a bunch of stuff in my Fantastic Four run that I'm proud of in terms of creating villains. So there's Modius, who was the, Is it Modius? I hope it
was. Modius is from Irredeemable.
Then it's Mobius. Then it's something. It's with an M.
Mumble, mumble.
Mumble, mumble. And boy, I sure hope it was a Modius. And it was early on in my Fantastic Four run, and he was a living equation. I mean, so I was able to use all my math stuff, and basically his power was he could add and subtract and multiply by touching stuff. So he can, you know. Oh. So I like that. That's in terms of villains, in terms of bad guys and stuff, and that's again not my wheelhouse. So, all right, now that we've demonstrated my ability to fail, what else we got?
Well, on that subject of your ability to fail, there's a question from Michael Bailey, who has a blog called View from the Long Box, and he asked, he remembered that during an interview while you were writing Birthright, that Lex Luthor being cast as an evil businessman didn't really work for you until someone convinced you otherwise.
Actually, that's not really exactly how it broke down. Okay. What happened was this, that I didn't buy Lex Luthor as an evil businessman in this day and age. Let me back up, because that was 2000.
I was about to say.
In this day and age, suddenly he becomes more relevant than ever. But I think that the decision to make Luthor in 1985 to sort of retrofit him as an evil businessman for that time was probably a good solution. I think that as we got into the 90s and early aughts, and this seems weird to say in the wake of the recent financial crises, but there was a time, even just a few years ago, when big business was not exactly the you know, and Wall Street was not the worst thing we had to fear.
They have great PR.
Yeah, and so I it didn't work for me. However, and this is where you have to put your ego aside, and I am capable of doing that on occasion, and I had, you know, when it came to Birthright, I could have moved Luthor away from the evil businessman and tried to make him something else, completely different. But I had to accept the fact that even though it didn't work for me and I couldn't wrap my head around it, too many people have made it work really well. And the, you know, the Lois and Clark TV show used that incarnation, and the cartoon used that incarnation, and you know, Smallville used that incarnation to a large extent. So, you know, you look at situations like that and you have to be able to swallow your pride and go, all right, it doesn't make sense to me, but that doesn't mean it's broken. It means that my problem is I can't. This is kind of pursuant to our previous conversations about Wonder Woman, where I, just because I can't wrap my head around the concept, the problem may be with me and not with the concept. So I wish more of my fellow creators would sort of rein in their egos a little bit and realize that sometimes it's not the thing that you're working on is broken. Sometimes it's that you just haven't thought enough about it.
It's kind of interesting that you say that, because I think comics are probably like one of the, outside of TV, and even movies to a degree, is one of the mediums where the problem really might be the writer, not the character, because the character doesn't belong to the writer. Like, it's really like, you know, there's some people in life you just don't get along with, and there's nothing you do, and like, the characters are like living people you're working off of, like, maybe I just don't get this.
Maybe it's
person.
There's no sin in that.
Yeah,
you walk away. I mean, I've always said that my favorite thing about early Marvel was that they came out with a Hulk. It was like Stan and Jack's like third or fourth out of the box, second or third out of the box, and it wasn't working. Like we can tell with it only lasted six issues with each issue the direction was radically changed. It was so obvious in retrospect. They didn't know from issue to issue what to do with the Hulk. So what did? They canceled it with issue six. And then they just sort of let him poke around in the background for a few years as a supporting character, and they'd bring him out when they had a good use for him, and they put him back in the box. And then eventually he got his own series again, and they had a direction, and it took off. But we wouldn't do that today. What we would do now is we would have him last for four issues, and then we would panic because the sales weren't where we wanted them to be, and all of a sudden we would make him this and this, and we would give him giant guns, and we would give him a new origin, and we would turn his skin orange, and we would, you know, give him a robot duplicate or whatever. I mean, we would panic. I like this idea better. Some things don't always work all the time, and it doesn't mean they're broken. It means that you just got to put them aside. Look, I've also used this example over and over again, but luckily not in a podcast. Anybody who says he knows what will sell in comics and won't sell in comics is just full of crap, because the best argument against that has always been that not once, but twice, Green Arrow has been DC's best-selling comic book. And that is not to take away from Green Arrow, But no one before it happened the first time could ever have predicted that of all the books DC published, Green Arrow would be its best-selling book. And then in 1980-something, Mike Grell comes along, and suddenly it's a huge hit, and suddenly it's the bellwether at DC Comics. And that lasts for a while. And then it kind of slides back down to where you would expect Green Arrow to slide down. And then, lo and behold, Kevin Smith comes along, and suddenly people are reading Green Arrow again. So in an industry where Green Arrow can be the shining star of sales, then nobody has any idea what tomorrow will bring.
Green Arrow is the canary in the mine.
Exactly. And on that note, I think we're going to have to fade out for this time.
Yes.
But
yes.
We will be back.
We've got more questions for later.
We will be back next time, so we will see you then.
Have a good night.